seated. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. This is a rescheduled hearing in Peterson versus Meyer. Before we get started, Mr. McGeehee, the court's sympathies on your wife's passing.
Thank you.
Each of you will have 15 minutes. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. As you approach the podium, give us your name and the party you represent so that we've got that for the recording. The podium is adjustable. If you want to adjust it up or down, there's a toggle switch somewhere back there. Whenever you're ready, appellant may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Zorislav Lederman. I represent Scott Meyer. Mr. Meyer is the appellant here on appeal. He was the respondent in the district court HRO case. Mr. Meyer is also present with us here today. We're here, Your Honors, to ask that the court reverse the HRO from the district court. We've outlined a number of reasons in our briefing, and hopefully I can discuss some of these issues here today.
Why don't you start with kind of telling us what this contentious battle is all about?
Well, the contentious battle, Your Honor, is pertaining to a child between Mrs. Peterson and Mr. Meyer. He is now 10 years old. Mr. Meyer and Ms. Peterson separated shortly after the child was born. And ever since, there has been ongoing litigation and disputes pertaining to the son. This started in California. Then there was litigation in Iowa. And now the child and the mother live here, and so now there is litigation here in Minnesota pertaining to the child.
Dad
as well.
Comes back every month for 10 days.
At the time when this incident was happening, yes, that's what was going on. My understanding, Mr. Meyer lives here on a more permanent basis now, but for a number of years, Mr. Meyer did live in Florida, and he would travel to Minnesota for the first 10 days of each month to spend time with the son.
So help me again, he now lives in Minnesota again?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
so
he never lived in Minnesota. He lived temporarily in Minnesota
for
10 days
now.
Of each month, but he now lives here more permanently from my understanding, yes. And so this these disputes have been going on for 10 years, and disputes vary. I wasn't involved in the family court litigation. But there was child custody problems. There were issues about Mr. Meyer being able to take the son to travel, sometimes within the United States, sometimes outside the United States. There were issues with the passport. And these issues continue to go on to this day. And part of our argument here is that the court should look to the context of this.
How many times did they go back to court on these issues?
Yes, and so.
How many times?
How many times have they been in court?
Yeah, on these issues.
I don't know, Your Honor.
10 years.
I don't know how many times they've been in court, but I do know there were numerous court filings again between the three states. Again, I'm only involved in this HRO case. I believe Mr. Meyer had other counsel.
And they did ADR.
I don't know, Your Honor. I presume that there may have been mediation at some points. But these issues continue to go on, and I believe as recent as a few months ago, there was a court hearing pertaining to the passport, and I don't know how that was resolved. But these are issues that are continuing, and I don't know that they're going to get any better until the son turns 18, because the parties don't agree in a lot of things.
So what do you want us to do?
Well, we'd like for you to reverse the HRO.
Yeah, okay. That's it, very simply, huh?
Well, this particular case is about the harassment restraining order. And although there are a lot of other issues that the parties have, what we have here is a very limited, is this HRO that was issued by Olmsted County.
Let me ask you, notwithstanding the HRO, Dad is getting his visitation?
Yes.
Okay.
So going back to this HRO, and we've outlined a number of different reasons as to why it should be reversed. And the court should look initially to just a statutory requirement, and frankly, the court can resolve this case based on just one issue as opposed to looking at all of them. The statute, the HRO statute, requires repeated incidents of harassment. And harassment, the term harassment, is defined, and that's not really the issue here. The issue is, what does it mean to have repeated incidents? And this term repeated incidents is not defined, and the court should look at a couple things. First of all, the statute doesn't say repeated words or repeated actions. The statute says repeated incidents. So that in itself suggests that if you have some kind of a dispute that happens as part of one conversation or as part of one meeting, that should be counted as a single incident as opposed to several incidents. The statute requires two or more incidents in order for there to be a finding of harassment. And our argument here is that the base case that Ms. Peterson made is there was only one incident of harassment, even if we were to consider that to be harassment. I'd ask the court to look to the Peterson versus Johnson case from 2008, which we cite in our briefing with regards to this point. And so that was a case involving also a child custody dispute where the parents were fighting over custody of a son or a child, not a son. And the comments that were made in that case were as follows. One of the parents told the other, "I'll tear you to shreds. I know where you live." And the parent also said, "You'd be surprised at what kind of bad luck a guy can have." And so in Peterson versus Johnson, this court determined that that was not harassment, not because of the types of statements that were made, but because of the fact that all of these statements were made as part of a one single conversation. And we have the identical situation here. Ms. Peterson presented at the district court essentially two separate sets of conversations between her and Mr. Meyer.
The two on the 4th and the 5th.
Well, no. She presented a conversation from March of 2016, and then she presented another conversation that happened in October of 2017 on the 4th and on the 5th. And so I just want to clarify that the conversation...
those on the 4th and the 5th are not relevant to this case?
No, they're relevant. My point that I wanted to make is that the conversation from March simply can be viewed as harassment. That was a conversation dealing with dental care, where Mr. Meyer had reached out and they had a discussion about the son's dental care. They had a disagreement. And if the court looks at that under the case law that we cite, it's simply not possible to see that as harassment. And then we go to the two sets of messages from October of 2017. All of these messages occur. There's 12 messages total. 11 of them happen on October 4th, and then one of them happens on October 5th. And if the court is to look at the message from October 5th, again, based on the case law that we cite, that, again, cannot be seen as harassment. Mr. Meyer talks in the message about writing a book. And he talks about their child custody dispute. There are no threats in there.
Counsel, let's stop for a minute. On October 4th, I think, I'm just going to throw some quotes out here.
All right.
"I will ruin you."
Yes.
"October 5th, the games you play are ludicrous and childish. I don't care about losing or any of you or the corrupt judge's rhetoric." What do you think about those statements?
With regards to the first comment, Your Honor, "I will ruin you," I can understand the court's concern. With regards to the second comment from October 5th, where Mr. Meyer makes a comment about corrupt judges, if the court looks at the case which we cite, Witchell versus Witchell, and also Beach versus Leschke, both of those cases involve very similar kinds of comments that are revolving around a child custody dispute. And both those cases indicate that that's not enough, that a party who is argumentative, who makes inappropriate remarks, remarks that are rude, and perhaps offensive, that in itself, especially in the context of a child custody dispute, does not arise to harassment. What we do have here, the comments that I think the court will look at most and will be concerned about most, all of those comments happened during the conversation that happened on October 4th of 2017. And I counted them. There's 11 comments total. They all happened within a period of 1 hour between 9:43 p.m. to 10:44 p.m. These are not in-person comments. These were made over a social media messaging application that's used for parents who are separated to have conversation pertaining to the children. And the other thing that's important is that the subject line If the court looks at the actual exhibit from the district court, the subject line for all of those messages from October 4th was the same. The subject line was Friday court. And so all of these factors suggest that this was, even though this it took place over a period of 1 hour, there were only 11 messages total. Both parties were participating. It's not like Mr. Meyer is just sending messages and there's no response. Your Honors, this is one single conversation, just like in Peterson. And just like the court decided in that case, this is not repeated incidents of harassment. And because of the fact that the March statement is not harassment, and because of the fact that the October 5th statement is not harassment, all we have here is just one incident of harassment, potentially, that occurred over a period of 1 hour on one day. And under the statute, that's not enough. Ms. Peterson had to show other incidents where harassment occurred, and all she showed was one potential incident where harassment could have possibly happened. And so just on those grounds alone, the HRO should be reversed in this case. But I will talk about some other issues that we raised in our briefing as well. So our position, Your Honors, is that even the comments that were made on October 4th, the comments about I will ruin you and some of the other similar statements that were made, even that is not harassment. And the reason for that is because, as this court made clear in Witchell, which is a case that is cited very often, once again, a case involving child custody, we have to look at the context. We can't just look at this thing and pull these statements out of context and forget that this is
special words that would create harassment. I mean, you're saying that this one that you just commented about was not harassment. Are there certain words that trigger it?
No, Your Honor, there aren't any certain words that would trigger it. But I think the comment, I will ruin you, which I understand may give the court concern, and that appears to be what the district court was concerned about. Our point is that the court can't just take that statement for what it is and say, well, that sounds threatening, so therefore it could be harassment. Our point is that we have to look at the larger context of what is being said here, first of all.
Well, did he intend to ruin her?
Well, he intended to ruin her through exposing her prior illegal conduct. And so if you tell a person, I'm going to ruin you, and there's nothing that comes before that or after that, if you just put that out there to somebody, then sure, that may sound like harassment. But if you tell a person that you've been engaging in misconduct and you kidnapped my son, you deprived me of my parental rights, and I'm going to ruin you by exposing your prior legal conduct through a book and through pursuing legal action, that is not harassment. And when I say that we should look to context, this is exactly what I mean, is that you can't look at a statement like that, as in our view the district court did, and pull that out of the general context where these conversations happen. So the other part of the context is to look at the conversation itself, to look at what the parties are talking about, and to look at the conduct of both parties as opposed to just one. And I will point out to the court, and I'll ask the court to look at how this whole conversation began on October 4th. Mr. Meyer started the conversation. He sent the first message, and actually there's nothing bad in here. He simply talks about some kind of some Friday court appearance that the parties had, and he is asking Ms. Peterson to provide some information as to whether she's going to show up. And if the court looks at her response, and his message says, if we don't plan on showing up Friday in court, please let me know so that you don't ruin Collins' weekend in Duluth for no reason. He was very much looking forward to going up there tonight. That's how this whole thing started. That's Mr. Meyer's comment. And Ms. Peterson's response, in our view, is what triggered this escalation that took place. She says, oh, don't turn this on me. This is all you and your obnoxious court filings. And then if the court reads the remaining nine messages, the parties are going back and forth. So this isn't like he's continuing to badger her and she's not responding. It's not a situation where she tells him, hey, please stop. I don't want to hear this anymore. Don't contact me anymore. And he just keeps going. In fact, there is nothing here to suggest that she ever said that. And to the contrary, she continued to respond to his comments. And she was also being argumentative.
Well, her second response does kind of say she doesn't want to have any more conversation about it. Please find something else in life to enjoy. That sounds like a conversation ender.
Your Honor, again, if the court looks in context, what she's saying here is that you're what she seems to say here is that he's kind of obsessed with this whole situation, and he should let it go. And his view is that he's not obsessed, that he's been railroaded, he's been deprived of his parental rights.
Sure.
And that's what he's talking about. So in our view,
it doesn't seem to be an invitation for, all I'm saying is it doesn't seem to say, let's keep talking about this. Instead, it's let's talk, just go move on to something else here.
Your Honor, we view this comment as her saying is that you're just over-exaggerating, you need to leave things alone. We don't see this comment as saying, please stop contacting me. And if the court looks further, she continues to respond to him and make other comments that don't seem to indicate that she wants to end the conversation. And so it looks like I'm going to be out of time here in just a few seconds. Unless the court has any questions, I'll reserve the rest for the rebuttal.
Okay. It appears we do not. Thank you. You will have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jim Magini. I here and represent the petitioner in the district court action and the respondent in this appeal, Emily Peterson. I'd like to start with a little critique about appellant's reliance on Peterson for the proposition that ongoing harassing statements in a single conversation don't constitute harassment. That's not what the case in Peterson held. The statute says repeated acts. It doesn't require repeated acts spread out over a period of time. And I don't see a case that this court's ever held that you can't commit repeated acts of harassing conduct in an ongoing exchange. The court in Peterson, this court in Peterson, when it analyzed the acts, basically it was talking about whether those words were an assault, because the district court held in Peterson that there was a single act of assault. And the analysis from Peterson was that in the harassment restraining order context, that kind of assault didn't rise to the level of harassment, verbal assault. It had to be a physical assault. There's no holding in Peterson regarding, there was talk about him saying, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do the other thing to you. But the court in Peterson basically said that's not an assault because there was no physical assault. That was the analysis. I disagree with counsel's position that the holding from that case is that you can't commit harassment in a series of statements that occur over a short period of time. And that's what happened here partly. I agree with the district court that the appellant harassed responded with his comments on October 4th, but it wasn't just the October 4th comments, although it could be. What appellant leaves out of their quotes, and this court didn't address either, but another one of the quotes from the October 4th string were, you have only seen the tip of the iceberg from me in your life. And appellant wants you to take these statements in context. Let's take that statement in the context that these parties now, at this point, have been involved in contentious, long-going litigation across the country from California to Minnesota. And now a statement like that, that you've only seen the tip of the iceberg over the last 9 years in the context of this relationship, certainly could be deemed as harassing. And then later in the conversation, again, and the court touched on that, now I lost my spot, but you already said it. He said something to the effect that you're not going to get away with this, I don't care what the courts think, and you've not seen the last of me. So here you have multiple statements of harassment. Granted, they were over a period of an hour or so in one day.
How long have you been in the divorce work?
I don't do a lot of divorce work, Your Honor.
30 years worth of divorce work, and I was thinking of how many times these same comments come up back and forth, and the fighting goes back and forth and back and forth.
I agree with you. It's one of the more contentious areas of law, which is why I try to stay away from it. But here, it was more than just divorce talk. It was talk about, I will ruin you. And you've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
He does say, I will ruin you, followed by the sentence, no physical violence, of course. I will just put on display everything you've done.
Well, that could be an invasion of privacy, too. What does he mean by that? I'm going to put on display. And again, harassment is something that has a substantial effect not only on the security of the other party, but also on the privacy. you know, the declarer like this can't make these statements to somebody and then explain them away later and say, well, what I really meant was this, and tell the court. And that's what appellant's trying to do here and try to do in the district court. Well, if you, you know, what we really meant was this, what we really meant was that. Look at the way respondent reacted to these statements. She says, please stop threatening me. And so to say that the respondent didn't ask him to stop, it's cited in the addendum. Please don't threaten me, Scott. I don't appreciate your tone and hostility.
That was her third response. Before that, she had said, don't turn this on me. This is you and your obnoxious court filings, which kind of, that one at least, kind of to me, sort of asks for a response.
Well, you just said it didn't, though, earlier.
The next one doesn't.
The next one doesn't, for sure.
But it certainly seems like her first one is argumentative in response.
Well, and I suppose when you've got, as Your Honor stated, Judge Stauber stated, you have this divorce that's been going on for so long. Some of these responses, you have to respond, otherwise it's not going to stop, right? The people are sending you messages. But it got to the point.
You could just block the number and not respond.
You could, but you're in a relationship and you have a child in common, so there's got to be some communication. And my client admits.
That's why they had our family wizard.
It got to that point because they couldn't communicate effectively without it. Kind of, again, when you think about taking these statements in context.
Oh, I stand corrected. This communication was on our family wizard.
It was, and because of the previous. You know, if you read in the transcript, Ms. Peterson says at one point, the reason I was scared is because I was afraid it was going to be like it was before. Now, there was some objections to the testimony about the petitioner, the appellant, making some threats to Ms. Peterson, but it did come out that she had experienced some threats from him previously. There was lots of talk about you can't get into the history of the relationship, but this court has said in harassment restraining orders and orders for protection recently, there was a holding in 2018 that says, yes, that is relevant to take the communications in context of what's happening today. So you here you have a couple who have been in litigation for 9 years. Ms. Peterson's fleeing across the country. She goes from California to Iowa to Minnesota, and she's experienced physical threats of violence, in fact, a threat to kill her, and now threats to ruin her, and that she's only seen the tip of the iceberg. These are the types of repeated unwanted acts that constitute harassment. They not only affected her security, she testified that they were afraid to give their son the security code to their home because the appellant might get it from him. That's a substantial adverse effect on their security. She also testified that they were thinking about taking firearm training, but that they didn't because the son was so young. They didn't want to expose him to firearms, although she did also testify in the hearing that she understood that appellant actually was trained in using firearms. So the testimony really brings out the fact that the respondent here did have a substantial effect. This behavior substantially affected her safety and security. And I agree, she probably shouldn't have or stopped the conversation, but some people just can't stop or whatever, and she was trying to put a stop to it. She also testified, you know, you have these harassment restraining orders that get filed all the time in the district court. Most of the petitioners don't include everything they possibly could in that filing for various reasons. You don't want to attach a 500-page exhibit to a petition for a harassment restraining order. So she attached, and what she testified to was, these are the things that got me scared. But she testified that there were hundreds of other incidents where the appellant made comments to her that caused her concern. She attached the most recent ones to support the ex parte application. So not only do we have the multiple statements on October 4th, the statement on October 5th, and then the long history, hundreds of statements leading up to that that she did not include in her petition, but she testified to, and then an incident where the appellant threatened to kill her. So she's got the history of repeated unwanted acts. It's clear the district court did not abuse his discretion in granting this order. I don't know, the court hasn't asked about the constitutional arguments that were made by the appellant. And I don't know that there's any persuasive argument. The appellant seems to think that the harassment restraining order somehow is prohibiting him from publishing his book that's referenced. I don't see that in the order.
I was going to ask that question to appellant's counsel, but we ran out of time. I'm looking at the order right now, and I don't see anything in the order that prohibits him from writing whatever book he wants.
There is nothing in the order, Your Honor. I believe that the order as written certainly satisfied the it's not a First Amendment prohibition, and it's not unconstitutionally vague. It's clear in its prohibitions.
He can't go within a certain distance from her home, her job site, and he's to limit his contacts through our family wizard.
Correct. And it actually satisfied what the respondent was asking for. In the hearing, when the respondent was asked about, now, since you've got the ex parte order, has this harassing type of messaging on our family wizard stopped? And she testified that it had. And that's all the district court ordered, was to stop this harassing type language in the My Family Wizard. And then when appellant was cross-examined about it, he even agreed, since he was served the ex parte order, he stopped the type of language in the My Family Wizard that put the respondent at fear, that made her afraid that he might get into her house, that she wouldn't give their son the security code, afraid that she and her husband somehow needed to maybe do some firearms training. That's the kind of reaction that someone has who's genuinely affected by the language. And again, you could parse that language out and explain it away in any way you want. It's a long divorce. It's been contentious for 9 years. But it's a subjective standard. To tell someone you're going to ruin them can be interpreted many different ways. To tell someone you've only seen the tip of the iceberg can be interpreted in many different ways. And it's not unreasonable for someone to interpret those messages as threatening, and it certainly wasn't outside the court's discretion to issue and grant the harassment restraining order. We would respectfully ask this court to affirm the district court's order.
What did the father lose as a result of this?
Nothing. He lost the ability to use the type of language in My Family Wizard messaging that caused Ms. Peterson to be fearful. Other than that, he didn't lose anything. He still had his parenting time. They've admitted today they still had him parenting time. I think there's an admission in the brief and today that at least one of the messages was harassing. So no, he's lost nothing other than his ability to use the type of language that many people use in a relationship. If you're familiar with the ongoing relationship in a divorce, this controlling type of language that is asserted by people who want to control the situation and dictate how things go. And it overshot the mark in this case, and it rather than just trying to assert himself, he became threatening.
Well, I go back to sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
I haven't heard that in a while, Your Honor. I agree.
I'm an old man.
So. I understand. I appreciate that. We used that term a lot when I was growing up. Yeah. I'm the rubber, you're the glue. But again, when you have somebody who reacts in a way that they feel they need to go to the district court and get a harassment restraining order. If you look at the history of filings by these parties, and I think part of it's in the record, there was quite a bit filed with the post-trial motion. The litigation in this case is mostly driven by appellant. Ms. Peterson, to go and go through the process and the cost and the expense and the to go to get a harassment restraining order and then testify to how these words affected her clearly show that this had a substantial effect on her, even though it's words. And again, take it in context. That's appellant's argument. You got to take all this in context. This is a woman who testified that this man threatened to kill her at one point.
Okay, the kid gets older. Things settle down. She can always give that restraining order away, right?
Well, it's going to expire in 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a two-year order.
And she would have to renew it if she...
And she'd have to have grounds for that. Again, the statute's a little more peculiar, trying to extend a harassment restraining order. You need to have a violation of the previous order in order to extend it. So,
which there apparently have not been.
There have not been problems since the order was issued, correct. Unless the court has further questions, I think I've made my argument.
It looks like we have none. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to thank the court and counsel for rescheduling this hearing for me.
And again, our sympathies.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honors. Your Honors, with respect to
To the comment about threatening to kill, Ms. Peterson, I will note a couple things. First of all, this was a case where Ms. Peterson had to carry the burden of proof. And so it was her duty to prove her case by preponderance of the evidence. And so the fact that she didn't include prior statements in her petition and she didn't offer them as exhibits, that shouldn't be used as a pass. She had a duty to offer these things if she wanted them to be considered, and she didn't. And so this very vague testimony that she provided that there has been ongoing other harassment or comments, even though there was no specificity as to what this other harassment was, you can't rely on that to satisfy your burden of proof. With regards to comments about threatening to kill her, that was alleged to have happened 9 years ago. That was shortly after the son was born. That happened in California, and as we laid out in our reply brief, that was actually considered already by the California appellate courts, and there was determined that that comment wasn't made. And so even though she wants to claim that she was threatened with her life, Mr. Meyer denies that that ever happened. It was already determined that that didn't happen. And on top of that, it's so remotely removed from what's happening now, she can't rely on that comment from 9 years ago to claim that what happened on October 4th of 2017 constitutes harassment.
The district court doesn't seem, to my reading, to have relied on that old conversation anyway.
That's correct. The district court didn't seem to take that into account.
I can't tell if the district court believed or disbelieved her testimony.
Right. It's not clear on that issue, but my understanding is that Ms. Peterson is making the argument here is that that should be considered, and our point is that it shouldn't.
What about the question of the First Amendment? I noticed in his motion for a new trial, he said that the harassment order is tantamount to telling me that I cannot write a book. And I don't see anything about whether he can write a book in this order.
Your Honor, the First Amendment argument that we're making here on appeal doesn't relate to Mr. Meyer's ability to write books. It relates to his ability to criticize Ms. Peterson's parenting without being subject to arrest. And this is the argument that we make in the briefing that we submitted here on appeal, as opposed to the arguments that Mr. Meyer may have made earlier. Our point is this: when you have two parties that are required to communicate, this is not a case where you have two romantic partners who have no property, no children, they've just separated, and you have one party who just continues to come back and bother the other one. Mr. Meyer and Ms. Peterson, they have to communicate, and they have to be able to talk to one another about their son. And so the question that comes up now, given this order that's in place, is where do we draw the line between what's going to be labeled harassment versus what's going to be labeled as criticism? What if Mr. Meyer, for example, feels that Ms. Peterson is engaging in child neglect, and he sends her a message and says that he's going to report her to the police and that will ruin her based on what she's doing to their son?
Of course, what he could do if he really believes that to be true, he can just go ahead and report it to the child maltreatment authorities.
He can do that, Your Honor, but he also has the right to offer that opinion to her.
I have to interrupt you. If that's the case, if he does offer that opinion and he has solid evidence of it, I don't see a court would find that harassing if there's evidence of child neglect.
Your Honor, I agree that the court will not find that harassing, but the way that these harassment restraining cases work is that you arrest a person and ask questions later. There is a statute that orders police officers to make an arrest when there is a report made.
Well, this goes to vagueness now. You're talking about vagueness?
Yes. And so it's vague in a sense that it's not clear what Mr. Meyer can and can't do, and it violates his First Amendment in a sense that he's now afraid to criticize her parenting because he doesn't want to be arrested, because she can pick up the phone, call the police, they're going to come and they're going to arrest him, and sure, he can show up in court in a few days after the holding period expires.
He can simply go to the welfare department and say, my child is being beaten up by her mother or whatever, and you know, the child protection unit will get right on it.
Your Honor,
I think another way of saying that is that you're right to a certain extent that unless there's a finding of neglect, at which point he can certainly say you've neglected the child and that's not harassment, then it's just his word she's neglecting it. And yes, I think that might very well fall into the repeated incidences of words that are somewhat threatening to the wife. So yes, But I think what that indicates is that he has to be very careful, and in that sense, there's a First Amendment concern. But I don't think he has to guess. If there's a finding of neglect, then he's safe and secure in making that comment. If it's just his word and he hasn't made a complaint, or the complaint hasn't been addressed yet, he's taken a chance.
Your Honor, the point that we're making is that...
You can go ahead and respond to that.
Sure. The point that we're making, Your Honor, is that he is afraid to offer that criticism to her because he's afraid that she will use it to have him arrested, even though his comments could be true. She can have him arrested, and then he can later prove that they're true, but that it's too late. He's been already arrested.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. We thank counsel for your briefing and argument, and we will issue our decision within 90 days. That was the only matter on this afternoon's calendar, and so we're in recess.
My wife died 3 years ago of cancer, so I'm sympathetic.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Just my advice to you is keep on working. Keeps the brain going.
Okay? It does. I'm glad to be back to work.
Good.
Thank you, counsel. I appreciate it. Oh, go ahead.
I can understand you. What is the point of the class?